Blog Talk Radio.
To be the man, you gotta beat the man.
You wanna find out how good you are? You're looking at the measuring stick. Let's go, hook him up!
I want to dog you until I wear your Texas ass out.
The game is awesome.
And hell, I might even get on top of my wife tonight.
Welcome to another edition of Over the Top Radio. I am your host, Ed, in San Antonio, and I'm currently joined by neither of my co-hosts. So either they forgot we... You're here? According to the switchboard, I don't see anything.
I'm here.
Okay. Well, I guess you keep an eye on the switchboard because it says no caller. It doesn't even have me logged on here. Oh, shit. But anyway, what's going on, Couture?
Nothing.
Craig is here.
Craig is here. Well, how's it going, Craig?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm okay.
What's wrong, Craig? I'm sick.
Me too. I'm so sick.
You guys are sick.
Yeah.
Well, the weather is pretty shitty down here, so I'm guessing you guys are experiencing the same thing.
I'm not sick.
No, he said I sound sick.
Oh. Hey, Craig's sick.
Yeah, I've got a... Yeah, anyway.
It sounded a little easily.
Hey, I'm extra sensual tonight, that's all.
That was kind of weird.
It sounds like you got something on your mind other than the normal thing.
No.
Sounds like you're
trying
to move or something.
No, I just got a head cold and stuff. Feeling like $100. Oh. Not the usual $1,000 I usually feel like.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, we really didn't have too much fun for this week, so I guess we're just going to go with the news of the week, even though it didn't seem like there was a whole lot of news, but it's been a while since we did a news show, so... I guess
yeah.
We could go ahead and kick that off if Craig does have it.
I sent Craig something, and there's some send him a rundown of the new war games if you do. We can talk about that a little bit too. So,
yeah, I was actually just looking at that. We might as well start with that. The first half of this DVD looks really great, and then it takes a nosedive. the new war games DVD is coming out, in a couple weeks?
I guess so.
So it's got your, to start off, it's got your, superpowers versus the Four Horsemen from the Bash of 1987, and then it's got the one from the same year, Dusty, the Warriors, Nikita and Paul against the Four Horsemen, and the War Machine.
It has all those matches in its entirety because they never really showed them as far as back in the day.
They showed them like on videotape.
Yeah.
Well, videotape, but I mean, as far as those were like those first few that they did, the original ones, they were really good about never actually really showing anything on TV about it, and making you wanna, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I think that's what helped build the War Games aura, is because you heard they talked about it, mind you, they talked about it and told you how brutal and everything was, and JJ got hurt, and
they would show you like 2 minutes of it or something like that on TV.
If anything, it was probably like a 15 seconds. I mean, they were really good about, like, that's what I think helped start the aura of the War Games, was those first three and the fact that they didn't show anything.
Mm-hmm. I worked for this guy back when I was in high school, and he would always, every time they'd put, WCW, NWA would put out a new DVD, or excuse me, videotape, he would buy it. But the stupid things would run, you know, $59.99. And then a month later, this package would show up and, you know, huge clamshell box. And I remember he had this in the two War Games matches from 87 were just, they were fun to watch. There's a big spot, you know, where Animal has Tully Blanchard and he's got him like in slingshot position, and he just over and over again keeps, you know, slamming his head into the cage. And but that's, yeah, that was on the Bash of 87 on the commercial tape. And I'm pretty sure both of those matches were on the one Bash of 87.
Yeah, and I think J.J. Dillon actually got his shoulder destroyed in this match by the Road Warriors.
Mm.
And who took his spot? Who was the dude in the mask?
The War Machine was Big Bubba.
Yeah. Oh, okay. And then yeah. Someone take who took Ellering's place?
Nobody. He wrestled in the match.
Yeah, I thought he had got there too in one of them. Okay.
When you heard the first one, you knew exactly. You knew one of the managers would be the one to give up. That's why you're involved in it. You know.
Hey. Hey, say what you will about Dusty, but that was actually a very smart booking.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, that's probably his the best thing he ever, like, match he ever created, I think.
Yeah. Well, to this day, it's still one of my all-time, like, probably top three matches. I mean, you got Royal Rumble, War Games, and then I'd have to think about what else.
Yeah, and they were talking about bringing it back. I don't know why they never... That Triple H never brought that back. I remember it's just like maybe a year, 2 years ago, they were talking about doing a War Games, but then it never came to fruition.
Well, I'm sure they'll have one when Spencer starts to get more power and then starts to leave, because it's Vince's call. Vince doesn't want the War Games because Vince didn't invent the War Games, and the War Games is one of the few fucking awesome things that WCW created or the NWA created, and Vince isn't going to use that.
Like he kind of put up the ring.
Yeah, you don't want to put up two rings and you know, you move all those seats and you don't make as much coin because you're not selling seats.
They could do it at WrestleMania. It wouldn't make that much of a difference.
That's true. That's very true. And with the ingenuity that they have, you'd think they'd be able to, you know, I don't know, maybe even bring in a whole other ring. I mean, if they could support the Statue of Liberty, you know, from the rafters, I'm sure they could figure something out.
If the Statue of Liberty wasn't hanging from the rafters, the Statue of Liberty was hanging because of four giant-ass poles that were around the ring. They need to invest in, like, hovercraft technology where that shit will just float above the ring, and there ain't shit blocking your way.
And before too long, they're just going to suspend the ring from the lighting rig, and the bumps won't even feel like you're doing anything. It'll feel like hitting a trampoline.
Right. Right, yeah. They can move it up higher so the people in those seats can get a better look for a few seconds and then move it over to the side. It'd be awesome. Yeah, it'd be like a Tommy Lee drum solo setup from the 80s.
Oh, good relate. Anyway, it's got those two War Games on it. It's also got the Tower of Doom match from the Bash of 88.
I don't even know why this is on there. They just run out of shit to put on.
What was the Tower of Doom?
The Tower of Doom, that was like the Triple Dome of Terror in World Class.
Yeah.
That's not the one with Hulk Hogan and shit, is it?
No.
No, this is like the one they did at the Bash where it's like Jimmy Garvin, it was the Garvins, the Road Warriors, and Dr. Death against, I think it was Ivan Koloff, the Russian assassin, Al Perez, Mike Rotunda, and Kevin Sullivan. You remember when Kevin Sullivan was trying to get Precious and was trying to brainwash her or something like that? And,
yeah.
And so they start to, they had the three cages, the three-tiered cage, and you got to start at the top and make your way to the bottom. So you got all these guys sitting on the outside that had to climb this ladder to the third story of this cage and work their way down. It's like, it sounds impressive when you hear about it, but when you watch it, it's like fucking boring as hell. It's like
an execution. It's not good.
It's like one of those, it's like one of those scaffold matches when you first hear about them. You say, holy shit, this is going to be awesome. And the only thing anybody remembers about a scaffold match being good is when Cornette blew his knees out, you know?
Yeah.
And they it's like every couple of minutes, like the trap door opens and a guy can get down to the next cage. But if he doesn't, then it can end up with like 2-on-1 or something like that. And in the end, it's like Jimmy Garvin and Kevin Sullivan, obviously, are the last two down there. And Precious is in the bottom cage, and she gives the key to whoever she wants to, and she gives it to Jimmy Garvin. And,
Yeah, at the buzzer, the cage doors would open to the next level, but they would also close. So if you were stuck, you know, in the second cage or whatever, you know, the door would close, and you'd have to fight in there for the time period. It was way overbooked, and it didn't make a ton of sense.
It was difficult as hell to watch.
Yeah, you're three tiers.
Being there live in the arena, I mean, Jesus Christ! It was impressive looking setup, but you know, it was just not anything. I don't even know why they just didn't do this as a war games. It would make so much more sense. You had the same number of guys, so I don't know.
This reminds me of Brian was working in a 4-man match. And he was sitting there telling the guys, okay, so you two are going to go outside, and then him and I are going to work in the ring. Now, you guys, whatever you do, don't do anything out there. Just sell. And then keep the focus on what's going on in the ring, and then we can, you know, bump in and out and sell, blah, 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 blah. You don't want to distract from what's going on in the ring, which makes total sense.
Yeah.
So he throws these two rookies outside. The first thing they do is start brawling, and as Brian's trying to do this big comeback spot, there's a big backdrop on the floor. You can just, Brian audibly yells the F word and got in trouble.
That's kind of like common sense, like in a hallway match when two guys sitting outside, you focus on two in the ring, you know?
Well, see, you said common sense. These are rookies. Anyway. Also,
there have been on the indie thing for 15 years that would have done the same thing. It's just called being stupid.
I saw this week where the guy that Brian used to work for got sent to prison.
Which guy?
I guess one of the Portland wrestlers that he worked for. I don't know when. He's like embezzled money. His name Frank Tolis, something like that.
Frank Tolis? John Tolis.
Culberson.
Culberson.
Was in the Observer.
That doesn't ring a bell to me. Anyway, I'll figure it out later.
Okay,
sorry. Fourth up, another War Games match from the Bash of 88. Dusty, Lex, Nikita, and Dr. Death, Paul Ellering against Four Horsemen. This is the Barry Windham administration here.
Yeah, this is actually on the Four Horsemen DVD. I don't know if you guys have that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was never released anywhere. It didn't even have any commentary on it. It's just one of the War Games they did at the Bash. Actually, the third War Games that they actually did, they did in New York. It was in they went to like the Nassau Coliseum like the day before Starrcade 87, and the third match was Dusty, Nikita. Wait, it was Dusty, Rock and Roll Express, Barry Windham, and Ronnie Garvin against Coley and Arn, the Midnight Express, and Big Bubba in a War Games match.
That sounds great. Well, I wonder if there's any footage of that around.
Obviously not.
Oh, man, that sounds awesome. I loved watching the Rock and Rolls and the Midnights in cage matches. They just always tore down the house.
Yeah.
The one that Craig just said, though, that has no commentary on the DVD? They didn't even add it? Or
I'm sure they added it.
It was just when they shot, they didn't really shoot. They would shoot some stuff for TV, but they wouldn't put everything on TV. I don't know why they didn't. They did a bunch of the war games around the Horn because of bashes. They were doing all those bashes, during the summer. So they do one in so many shows. So.
Well, that's cool that there's one that probably no one's really seen, because I don't remember seeing that one.
Might have been at that show that, I don't know, they had the backstage at the bash. I think we talked about that last week or something.
Are you talking about the video, the Jimmy Garvin video?
Yeah, it might have been one of those shows. I think that was at the Great American Bash in 1988. And we were all fucking around backstage.
Hey, Craig, have you seen those videos? You know what we're talking about?
No, I left the show early last week. I missed most of that.
Have you ever seen the Jimmy Garvin behind-the-scenes videos from the Bash at the Beach? Or anyway, Jimmy Garvin...
Great American Bash.
Great American Bash. Yeah, Jimmy Garvin is basically walking around backstage with a video camera. And just filming everybody, and it is the craziest shit you ever seen because Dr. Death and Hawk are so fucking high on cocaine, it's fucking scary.
Huh.
Arn Anderson moon the camera.
I like it. And Dusty Rose is all talking about a bunch of the fucking dealers.
Oh, so this isn't like that.
After today, I can go home and I don't have to see Jim Crockett no more.
This isn't like a Stasi act, and everybody was in on it.
Everybody was in on it, but they were so high they didn't realize what was going on. But, I don't think they actually show them doing any coke, but you know how, when guys have been doing coke, they do the thing with the water where they get their fingertips wet and they breathe in the water?
They show
Hawk doing that. Hawk does that on video.
Wow.
the greatest part, and we talked about it last week, is they're showing Hawk. He's making his blade, and Jimmy Garvin's asking him about it, and he's kind of telling him about him making the blade, and he's all, Jimmy, what's this for? And Jimmy Garvin responds, I'm going to send it to Meltzer. He's going to sell it to the Marks. And when he says that, Meltzer, Hawk's eyes just open real wide, what the fuck?
That's awesome. Did I ever tell you guys about the time we went up to Canada? And we got pulled over, and Matt Farmer had fashioned a blade and actually put tape around it, and he put it in a ring case, a jewelry box ring, you would present to your girlfriend,
Yeah.
And the fuzz found it, and they were like, "What in the world?" So here we are talking to a border agent about the way you get color. Anyway.
Well, at least he didn't scratch himself in the bicep with it, Kerry Von Erich.
Well, the best thing about the video is you get to see Bobby Eaton talk longer than he's ever talked.
And still couldn't understand him.
Yeah, and then what's funny is, when Stan Lee kind of, he takes off, he's all, but Buddy talks, Bobby talks.
Oh, my gosh. Actually, I have something somewhat similar to that. It's one of the tour managers for Def Leppard from probably around the same time, 88, 89. And he's filming what's going on. They're playing in the round, and everything was underneath the stage. And so this tour manager is filming all this stuff and then all the debauchery that is going on underneath the stage while they're jamming and just rats and, groupies and such and them drinking and being ridiculous. I got that a long time ago. Anyway, War Games 1988. We have, 89, the Road Warriors and the Midnights. Dr. Death versus the Fabulous Freebirds and the Samoan SWAT team.
This is one of my favorite ones.
This is funny because it was like the year before we spent, I've been watching World Class, it's been like 6 months out of the year the Samoans are like feuding with Michael Hayes, aren't they?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Michael Hayes is Steve, do it to it, Cox.
Steve, do it to it, Cox. Yeah, this is a great night.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of the greatest videos of all time because you got Dr. Death, who I'm sure he was probably cocaine out on this one, of this show too, because he decided he was going to not only pick up Terry Gordy and press fucking, I don't know, 375 pounds of Terry Gordy over his head, but he then proceeded to press slam him against the top of the cage, mind you, bouncing him off the top of the cage. He did it about four or five times. He must have done like a whole eight ball and got all crazy and just had to strafe a million men because I've never seen Terry Gordy press slam, let alone fucking multiple times against the cage. It was just the greatest visual ever.
The cage probably actually helped him out, didn't they? From bouncing up and down. Probably made it a little bit easier.
The ring
back up. Yeah, he was doing that. He would do like that like the year before in 87 to like Big Bubba. He would pick him up over his head. That dude was...
Yeah. Well, like I say, you know, cocaine adds to your strength. I mean, Dr. Death was so awesome. I mean, he was, at that time, I mean, he was just, he was a big dude. He had muscles, but he wasn't like a muscle freak or anything. You know, you could see his shoulders.
He could like have had big arms or something like that. Like,
he's just thick.
He was like that raw bone guy from the farm. You know what I mean? Just, you know, strong from doing all the chores, even though he doesn't like, he looks strong, but he doesn't look as strong as he is. But I mean, just, that dude was just a bad fucking man. And and also one of the best parts of this match is just the dynamic of Michael Hayes and Paulie Dangerously outside the cage the whole match. And you can hear him talking and giving advice the whole time. And it comes down to where, like, Paulie's like, he tells Michael Hayes, you got to go. And Michael Hayes goes, I got to go. Oh, you gotta go!
like he didn't think this was possible in this match.
but and then he gave everybody like DDTs. That was badass. When he did get in there, and that was just a badass match. That's just a fun match. That was one of the best WCW pay per views, you know, of all time. I think.
Yeah, it had a. Flair and Funk, when Flair's first match back after he got injured by Funk, he had Steamboat and Luger, and like I thought that was the best match on the show, actually.
That was the greatest match of all time.
Yeah, they had Sting and Muda, and the Dynamic Dudes and Skyscrapers. I'm struggling.
Okay, well, there was one bad thing on there, but...
And then that takes us into Wrestle War 1991. We have the Horsemen with Barry Windham and Larry Zbysko, Sid Vicious and Ric Flair versus Sting, Pillman, and the Steiners.
This is the one where it kind of sucked because Arnold was hurt and they had to go with Zbysko instead of Arn.
Yeah.
Dave gave this one 5 stars, I believe.
Really?
How do you? Yeah. I know he gave it 5 stars, but how do you give a match where Sid Vicious is asking Rick Steiner really loud, calling spots, and Rick Steiner saying yes, and when they do the spot, I mean that, and they did that twice.
It was a hot match. I mean, you know, just the heat was off the charts, and the audience was great.
Yeah, it was a good match after all. I mean, even though, like I say, Arnold wasn't in it, it was still good. I mean, it was awesome. And then I don't know if it was awesome or not awesome watching Brian Pillman almost get his neck broken.
Yeah, he picked him up for that power bomb and he stuffed him right down there on his neck. It kind of looked like when Nash dropped the Giant. You remember that?
Yeah. Now, was this the first one or the second one that he did that
first, to? The first one was the one where he landed right on his neck. I was kind of I mean, I don't know if I'd have picked him up and done it again. I mean.
Well, they are talking about Sid Vicious, though.
Yeah. And, Sid picked him up and did it again. And then Elegante came and tore the cage door off and submitted for his little buddy.
And until it started, he wasn't supposed to start the match because he was hurt. He had his shoulder all taped up to begin with.
Yeah, they had done a thing the previous day on the Saturday night show. They had this deal where Sting and the Steiners were already in Phoenix getting ready for the show, and they were doing this live thing from Phoenix, and they were going back and forth, and Ron Pillman was having a squash match on the Saturday night show, and Arn Anderson did this interview, and he said at the end of it, he said what Sting needs to remember is you don't leave your house with the back door unlocked, and nobody figured out what it meant. But later on, they came out and they just beat the shit out of Pillman, which is what it meant. So, and they hurt him going into that match.
Yeah, and he snuck in and he snuck in to start the match, and I just remember seeing was kind of tripping out.
He beat the shit out of Barry Windham too.
Him and Barry had an all. They were the ones that started. They that was an awesome start to the War Games.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was great.
1 year later, at WrestleWar, May 17th, 1992, we had the Sting Squadron versus the Dangerous Alliance.
It was Sting and Nikita Koloff and Barry Windham, Dustin Rhodes, and Ricky Steamboat against Rick Rude, Steve Austin, Arn Anderson, Bobby Eaton, and Larry Zbysko. Yeah, this might be, I think this may be my favorite War Games match. May even be the best one.
Yeah, it might be. I mean, it's really, really good, well booked. And it also started with an awesome first 5 minutes.
It was Barry Windham and Barry. Yeah, Steve Austin and Barry Windham. Steve Austin got beat the shit in that first 5 minutes.
That was awesome. This is back when there was a lot of blood in the War Games matches, too. And so they had the greatest spot ever where they had fucking Arn Anderson's head between the two rings.
Yeah.
And they're lifting him up and down on that. So it was fucking hilarious, dude.
There was a good spot where I think Medusa was with a Dangerous Alliance, and she climbed up to the top of the cage and was trying to slide the phone in somehow. And Sting went up there, and but they're both walking on the top of the cage, and they're telling her to get down. It's just he was off the charts in this one too. Awesome.
Yeah, that was a great spot. She just jumped out of her heels and scaled the cage, and everybody went crazy when she scaled the cage, and then Sting got up there and looked like the Undertaker walking the top of the Hell in a Cell.
I think Zbysko had. They had taken the hook, the hooks of the turnbuckles to the ring post, and they had taken a screwdriver or something and unconnected it, so he's got this big hook in his hand. He's about to hit Sting or somebody, but he ducks, and Bobby Eaton gets hit, and Eaton submits to an armbar.
Yeah. Yeah, that was awesome.
Next up was WCW Fall Brawl from September of 93 at Sting, Davey Boy Smith, Dustin Rhodes, and the Shockmaster versus Sid Vicious, Vader, and Harlem Heat.
The first 5 minutes when Dustin and Vader were in and beating the shit out of each other was good. The rest of it, I got no memory of.
Dustin and Vader had a bunch of bunch of good little matches. They never had any big ones, but they had some good little ones that were pretty badass.
Yeah.
And didn't they team in one of the Japan shows?
They came to, a Starcade Battle Bowl.
They might have done that, but then I think they might have teamed in one of the Japan Super Shows against, Norton and somebody.
I don't think so.
Didn't ring a bell to me, either.
I know he teamed with his dad at one of the Super Shows.
Next up is Fall Brawl from September 1994. We have Dusty, the Nasty Boys versus Terry Funk, Arn Anderson, Buckhouse Bunk, and Colonel Buckhouse Buck and Colonel Robert Parker.
Yeah, originally it was supposed to be Ming in the match, but they found some kind of legal loophole, and Colonel Robert Parker had to be the fourth man in this match. This was okay. I mean, it wasn't anything like mm-hmm. the old War Games, but he had Dusty and Terry Funk in there, so it was fun.
Yeah, there wasn't really good things in the match. I mean, Jesus Christ, the Nasty Boys are in there.
Well, don't get excited, Ed, because the next year, 1995 in September, this is where it starts to slide. The Hulkamaniacs, Hulk Hogan, Randy Savage, Lex Luger, and Sting, versus the Dungeon of Doom, Kamala, the Zodiac, the Shark, and Ming.
What a horrible stable that was.
Yeah.
I mean, they were okay when they had, like, the Giant and, like, the Faces of Fear or somebody like that, but fucking Zodiac, the Yes No guy, and terrible.
The Zodiac was basically Brutus Beefcake trying to look like the Missing Link, wasn't it?
Pretty much.
Yeah, it was like his third name change in, like, a year. So he was his brother Brutai, he was the Butcher, he was the Man with No Name, he was the Man with No Face, he was the Zodiac, and he came back as the Booty Man.
You know, there's a punk band out there. It's the name of the band is No Use for a Name. Just thought I'd throw that out there.
He came back as the Disciple.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that.
And the warrior kidnapped him and made him join the One Warrior Nation, the OWN.
Aren't they like the only dude in the One Warrior Nation?
That whole 2 months the Warrior was there, he had one member of his.
Then September of 96, the team NWO, which was Hollywood Hulk Hogan, Scott Hall, Kevin Nash, and a mystery partner. That was X-Pac, wasn't it?
No. This was way before they did the, remember when they did the fake Sting thing? And they thought Sting had turned the week before?
Okay.
In like the parking lot on Nitro. Even though Sting was in Japan, and like everybody knew he was in Japan, but they still thought he had turned on him. And so Sting shows up for the match. He said it wasn't me, like I telling Luger it wasn't me on Monday, and they said Luger said he didn't believe him. So Luger and Flair and Anderson, they just don't get another partner. They just go out there 3-4, and that's when the fake Sting came out, and then the real Sting came out and laid everybody in the NWO out and then gave Luger the finger and he left, and I think Luger ended up submitting or something like that.
Yeah, I remember now. Yeah, so it's Team NWO versus Team WCW from Fall Brawl.
Yeah, just watch the same kind of situation. Just watch TNA on Thursday. So it's the same thing they're doing.
Yeah, because they're about to
Sting has a little bit more reason to be mad, and I don't even know why AJ Styles is mad.
He's got bad hair, that's why.
Well.
I don't even know why dude's mad. I don't know.
He's growing. He's growing up through his hair.
Mm-hmm.
September of 97 at Fall Brawl. Again, Team NWO. This time it's Kevin Nash, Buff Bagwell, Six, and Conan versus the Horsemen. This is Flair, Steve McMichael, Chris Benoit, and Kurt Hennig. One of these names is not like the other. One of these names just doesn't belong.
And one of those names just makes it a bad match in general.
Yeah.
I mean, this was the one that right after Arn retired, they did the skit on Nitro, the parody of Arn's retirement speech. You remember that?
Yeah. Weren't they weird? It was kind of like the DX kind of nation skit, but it was just even more like they were kind of being
a little bit more mean spirited.
Yeah.
I mean, this was the one where Kurt Hennig turned on him. he like had an arm injury and he came in at the end and his arm had a sling and had handcuffs, and then they gave him to the NWO and he slammed the door on Ric Flair's head at the end of the match. So.
Yeah, I remember that being. I didn't like WCW at the time. It's just I couldn't take the NWO winning everything. It's like I want to watch.
I was in college. We were watching this stuff all the time, watching all the pay-per-views and everything.
And this is where War Games jumped the shark. September of 1998 at Fall Brawl, Team WCW, which was DDP, Roddy Piper, and The Warrior, versus Team Hollywood, which had Hogan, Stevie Ray, and Bret Hart, versus Team Wolfpack, Kevin Nash, Sting, and Lex Luger.
The only thing I remember is Warrior was coming out of the trap doors and Dave Boy Smith landed on it and got his drug problem started again. And he died. Like,
that's horrible.
I'm not blaming this, but still.
Yeah.
This was the one where he got slammed on the trap door in like a match earlier in the night. And, like,
right.
Fucked his
okay.
back up really bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't even know what to say about this match. It sucked. No good.
Yeah, it was pretty fucking bad. I mean, yeah.
And then after jumping the shark in 2000, in September, on Nitro, by the way, we had Sting, Booker T, Goldberg, and the ill-fated Chronic, and that's not what you're thinking, Ed, versus Kevin Nash, Jeff Jarrett, Scott Steiner, and the Harris Brothers.
The Harris Brothers.
Oh, the Harris Brothers.
Yeah.
Heavy D and Big Ron.
Were they like quality control or something?
Creative control. They were Patrick and Gerald. And Virgil was Shane.
Yeah.
Yeah, this was.
You know, Virgil was Curly Bill. Redneck.
Yes.
All I know is Virgil looked like he was on Crack Rock when he was at the WrestleCon.
He had people around him.
Huh?
Or nothing.
Yeah.
But yeah, this was the three. This wasn't even the War Games, the regular one. This was the three-tiered cage that they called War Games. It was the cage they brought out. You remember the cage they brought out for that fucking movie?
Yeah.
Ready to Rumble, which is vastly underrated and is an awesome film if anybody ever watched
it. It's fucking great. I mean, just the opening scene with the Macho Man makes it a fucking 5-star movie.
That's a fun movie. It's stupid as hell, but it's just like if you're into comedy, it's really fun to watch.
It starts off where what's his name, the former WCW champion, is like having this fantasy where he's being harassed by the guy running the like convenience store, and then he's fantasizing that they're having a wrestling match, and he's fucking kicking the convenience store's ass, and then you just hear, "Oh yeah, take me in!" And then the Macho Man just makes it totally awesome. And that movie
is like
great.
It's like the wrestler with all the drug problems and the weird ending.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that is
the movie to watch if you want to watch something fun and not think about anything too hard.
And wasn't the cage set up in the same arena that Owen fell from? Am I thinking the same sort of thing?
No, this was the War Games cages was the same cage, but this was like in like September. But they had like at Slamboree earlier in the year, they had done the three-tier cage with David Arquette was the champion, and he was defending against like Jeff and Jared and DDP, and he turned on DDP at the end of the match, and Canyon came out, and then Mike Awesome launched him off the top cage, and he went through the ramp or something.
Yeah, through the gimmick ramp.
Yeah.
David Arquette, fucking great. He was such a better world champion than Ric Flair ever was.
Oh, jeez.
Well, see, now you're just trolling.
Yeah. By the way,
I love when he had to sign at the WWE for he's a former WCW world champion.
That's right. don't know if you guys have listened. This is completely off topic, but it just came to my mind. I was listening to the Steve Austin podcast this last week, and excuse me. Sorry about that. Steve was talking. He talked for about 40 minutes on going to get a manicure and pedicure.
I told y'all last week he was doing like a grooming tip.
It was amazing. That's a great show.
Yeah. Did you listen to the Shawn Michaels interview that he did?
Yeah, it was great.
Yeah, that was good stuff.
Except I couldn't stop. Shawn Michaels kept saying, "You know what I mean? You know what I mean?"
Oh God, yes.
It was Buddy Wayne.
Wait, so Shawn Michaels talks exactly like Granny? Oh.
No. He talked exactly like Buddy Wayne, oddly enough. Anyway.
Buddy Wayne or Meltzer or somebody on one of the Observer radios, and they're all from talking about something, and then you know, something like that.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's kind of ear sleep.
Well, Shawn Michaels and Buddy Wayne have done a lot of pain medications, though.
It was noticeable to where it was actually kind of funny. So anyway, that was the upcoming WCW WWE release of War Games. So check that out if you're so inclined. So on to the news.
To this Mid-South DVD they got coming up.
Yeah.
They're doing like a documentary, I know, and they're putting a bunch of matches. I think there was like a 40-minute Terry Taylor title match, NWA title match they're putting on there.
Wow.
With like Jim Ross going back and doing some alternate commentary and stuff like that. A bunch of other old stuff. I'm looking forward to that.
That's like, old stuff for you guys. It's going to be like me seeing it for the first time.
Yeah.
I hope they do better match. Placement than they did on the World Class DVD because, the World Class documentary, one of the best ones they ever did as far as a documentary, but the match selection really wasn't that hot at all.
Wasn't nothing you had never seen before.
Yeah. I did just get in the mail from a friend. I got the Barbed Wire City DVD just today, so...
As producer of this show, you should get in contact with these guys and have them send us all free copies so we can review and advertise this show on our show. Wait, did I say that right? We can talk about their film on our show and give them.
I'll have you know that I did reach out to them when they were doing their Kickstarter campaign, and I never heard a thing from them. So, but I did. I did make a couple of emails. I did send a couple of emails to a couple of our friends, and hopefully they will respond soon, and we can talk about it.
I had an idea about doing a show covering, like, not so much the history of the company, but, like, all the different controversies, which were, like, a shitload of.
Yeah.
Back in the day, like the NWA title tournament or the mass transit or the crucifixion or, the fire or whatever.
There was a lot of them. There was
the lesbian scene. That was a big controversy at the time.
Jeez.
Well, what's her name went on the roof and started to strip. That was like a big thing at the time.
Yeah, it wasn't really controversial though. If it was controversial,
they
wouldn't have put it out on that.
But you and Kimono want to lay you?
Yeah. And then they also have like one of the first like miscarriage angles too.
Since she's pregnant, I never heard nothing about it again.
Yeah, I'm pregnant.
It's like
with
the
Tommy.
Just dried up or something. I don't know.
And then there was. Terry Funk with the jacket that he set on fire wrapped around the chair and the jacket flew into the audience.
Yes, he attached this to a chair using tape, yeah, and it set on fire. I guess he was using really strong tape or something. I don't know.
That was ill planned.
And then the lights went out when they went out into the audience, when the fire went out to the audience and the lights went out, and God. That was coming near the same business.
The fan basically got burnt because he was trying to pat off the fire on Cactus Jack.
The best way to describe ECW, there's a little clip, and it's, you have to go on YouTube to see it, but the best way to describe ECW was Public Enemy had all the fans come into the ring, and Hot Steppers playing, no, 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 you know, and everybody's just having a good time, and there's hundreds
of rainbow.
Yeah, there's hundreds of fans in the ring. They're jumping up and down. All of a sudden, the support beams fall from under the ring, and the whole ring collapses on the ground, and everybody freezes for just a second, and they're like, holy crap. And then, yeah!
Everybody's got to be stunned. Could have been a massive lawsuit right there.
Yeah.
Everybody's got to be stunned look on their face.
If you pay attention, there's a little kid right in the front who somebody has to basically, like, save. You know what I mean? Like, somebody grabbed them to make sure nothing happened, but that little kid could have got hurt.
You know, I was watching something the other day on YouTube that was kind of like this with the people hitting the ring. Is that the ring didn't collapse? Was when Buddy Roaster and Babyface in Portland.
Mm-hmm.
And, all the kids started jumping in the ring to be with Buddy Rose. Have you ever seen this? This was, like, one of the best things I've ever seen in my life.
I've never actually seen it, but I've heard Buddy Wayne talk about it.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure I forgot where I was going with that. But anyway, going back to you're talking about the controversies about like the NWA title when Shane Douglas threw that down. There's another documentary that I highly recommend, and that's the Jeremy Borash one. Forever Hardcore, I think
is what it's
called.
Yes. Actually, I saw it's up on YouTube. In fact, after we get through the show, I'll go and put it up on my channel. And if anybody wants to watch, you can go there and watch it.
Cool.
It's on your channel?
No,
will
it's
be.
Not on there right now, but I know I've seen it on there. Like just about every time I go on YouTube, I see like a thing about it, and it's on there in its entirety, and I'll just post it up on my YouTube channel next time I get a chance.
Okay.
After the show.
That's where I had seen it, but then one time I went back to seeing it, and they had, like, kind of gotten rid of it. But anyway, Terry Funk, they talked to Terry Funk about the end of, you know, the Shane Douglas thing, and Terry Funk was not a big fan of that angle, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he was very disapproving of it.
As he should have been.
Although it was a big deal, I mean, it did get them word of mouth, and it did kind of make the title mean something at the time, you know, kind of a boost for their company. So I'm fine with it. NWA didn't mean shit back then.
Okay, so getting on to news of the week, I love the first thing Couture sends me, and it's got a link on it. Gawker.com refuses to adhere to Hulk Hogan's sex tape ruling. In a statement released on the website on Thursday evening, Gawker.com announced that while they are removing the video of the Hulk Hogan Heather Klem sex tape, as they were ordered by a judge this week, they will not adhere to the entire ruling. Gawker announced that they will not remove their recap of the tape, noting that the recap is covered under free speech, and that they will defend that decision. They noted that the judge's language during the hearing made it clear only the tape was to be removed, but the language of the order lists in the articles. Gawker also noted that they are appealing the ruling requiring them to remove the video.
That makes sense. I mean, there's nothing wrong with the, like me doing a report of a wrestling pay-per-view. Like, I have a wrestling pay-per-view up on my site, and they own the copyright to it, so I had to take it down. Fine. They can't make me take down the run, you know, my
play-by-play
I've written up about it. So.
Sure. That makes sense to me, too.
Yeah, I mean, you know, basically, like, what's that, IMDb, I mean, that's basically what that is.
Yeah. Or go to Wikipedia. I mean, they give I go to moviespoiler.com all the time because sometimes these movies come out, I don't really want to go see them, so I'll just read the play-by-play of them on the site.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it's the same thing. It's no different. It's like spoilers. Spoilers are not elite.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway. Who cares? Hulk Hogan shouldn't have been stupid and sleeping around on his wife anyway.
Yeah.
My two cents. A new series on the WWE Divas is coming to TV. The E! Network, which is part of the NBC Universal family, has greenlit a new reality series about the WWE Divas. The series will go behind the scenes of the lives of the WWE performers, and it will be titled Totally Divas. WWE has the series concept in development for some time and have been filming material for at least for a month, including WrestleMania week. The series is to debut on 7/28 and will be produced by WWE and Bunim Murray Productions, which worked on the first series of Tough Enough as well. In the press release, it states something, well, here's the description. Appearing in the series are the Bella Twins, Brie and Nikki, a pair of seasoned veterans who have reached superstar status.
I have to interrupt you as soon as you mention the Bellas because I want to know why the so-called best wrestling reporter in the world, Dave Meltzer, and his little psychic, Brian Alvarez, have not retracted their statements made on Wrestling Observer Radio about Nikki Bella getting bigger boobs, when in fact Nikki Bella did not get bigger boobs. Brie Bella took her boobs out.
Okay.
This is news that was reported wrong, and it needs to be corrected, and I want to know why they haven't done it.
Probably because you brought it up.
Well, I was right, though. It's true. That's what happened. Brie took her boobs out.
I know.
It's a woman's tits. Who cares?
I care. Bella does the greatest thing ever, and this is going to be like the greatest fucking wrestling TV show of all time. It'll be better than Raw. I can't wait.
Speaking of boobs. And yes, we were. Just today, I'm on my way to get my son from school. And I'm following a school bus. It's driving me crazy. Finally, the school bus turns off. I start off, and I'm tearing down the street because I'm going to be late. I see a pack of teenage girls off to the side of the road. And I'm going to swerve around them into the next lane because you never know, stupid kids do stupid things. Well, this time, a girl turns around, looks at my truck, and lifts her shirt over her head, and then flees with the other girls behind her. So I got flashed by a 15, 16-year-old girl.
Well, hey, if you're going to get flashed by somebody, it's not like the man in the park with the raincoat, you know?
Yeah, but the important thing, did you get a picture and when will you be posting it?
I was doing 30 miles an hour. Are you kidding me?
Did you say you're going to get a boot?
They were a nice seat cup.
So did your son get a nice look at the boobs?
No. I was on my way to get him. My son is sick. Oh, okay. I'm going to keep him away from that for, well,
did you get her number?
No. Oh, God. Why did I even bring that up? Anyway, getting back to the WWE Divas thing here. As before, I was so rudely interrupted by one Edward Laredo appearing in the series.
I'm just trying to make sure the facts are straight and set. You know, I mean,
they're worse than back in the 70s when Gorilla Monsoon in that newspaper said superstar Billy Graham died and he'd never retracted his statement.
This is as bad as that, man. I'm very disappointed in Dave and Brian. Vinny, I know Vinny don't give a fuck, but Dave and Brian are supposed to be serious reporters. Yeah. They're not. Come on now.
Well, when it comes to boobs, you can be.
Next time, why don't you just email them in private? It might
sure.
do better.
That's very true.
And not start at the
end. Anyway, here's the press release. Appearing in the series are the Bella Twins, Nikki and Brie, a pair of seasoned veterans who have reached superstar status in the WWE ring. and earned their places in the spotlight. The duo will work hard, harder than ever, to maintain this level of excellence. Whether it's the newbies, whether the newbies like it or not, Naomi and Cameron are two knockouts. Oh, that doesn't sound great. Whose dance routines have made them stars on the tour and also behind the wheel. When conflict and success collide head on between these two, both who will be left standing? Don't call them divas. They don't call them divas for nothing. Natalia is a third generation sports entertainment star who knows the ropes and knows them well. She's seen lots of doors open for other divas, but often finds herself behind when it comes to achieving superstar status. Can she continue to soldier on as a quote-unquote bridesmaid? And tagging into the ring as the newest member of the Divas is Eva Marie, who is smoking hot, by the way, a passionate, sexy, extremely competitive force that wants stardom more than anyone else. Also joining the action is JoJo Offerman, never heard of her, an entertainer at heart, young and energetic, who will no doubt be a charismatic force in the ring. There you go.
It's going to be the greatest show ever.
Apparently, Daniel Bryan is going to be a guest star on there.
You know what I'm hoping? I'm hoping, because Bryan is always talking about how Whitney watches all that shit on E! Like the Kardashians and all that crap. And this sounds like something that Whitney would be awesome reviewing on the show.
Bryan is not.
I haven't watched E! since they had like Howard Stern on there. And at 10 o'clock at night was his show. And I don't know how many years that's been gone, but yeah, it's just like all those guys, all those bullshit reality shows on E! Now.
Yep. Agreed.
It'll fit right in. It's perfect for the show. And like I said,
I'll probably watch this show just because of what's involved. And
you should have Grady watch it report back every week.
You could have surprise run-ins from Daniel Bryan or John Cena.
Well, I think they can keep John Cena off. Because, I guess they didn't want him to look attached to anybody.
Anyway, the next headline just basically reads, Bryan Christopher arrested. Bryan Christopher Lawler, who is 41, by the way, was arrested on 4/11 in Henderson, Tennessee, on a DUI charge. Police report states that Lawler, the oldest son of Jerry Lawler, had failed to stop at an intersection and was pulled over. He was asked to recite the alphabet and was unable to do so. Didn't say backwards there. It just says unable to do the alphabet. He admitted to drinking more than half a liter of vodka and was taking methadone and Xanax.
Jesus Christ, dude. Methadone, that's the PC term for saying he's fucking a heroin addict.
Methadone, depending on the dosage, not that I would know firsthand or anything, but it's basically like eating 4-5 milligram Vicodins. So,
is that what they use to get off of drugs?
Yes.
It's what they use to get people off of heroin, but the thing is, it's just as addicting as heroin, and it's just as powerful as heroin. And
it's an opiate, just like Vicodin or whatever, but it is exactly to get people off of heroin, but it's also a painkiller as well.
Yeah, I remember going back a few years back when I used to have like a Friday night coke habit, and one guy, he owed me some money, so he ended up paying me back, and he gave me like fucking 3 8-balls or something, dude. Anyway. I went on a little bender, and I ended up meeting this one girl, and basically we went on a bender together, and then like Friday, Saturday, Sunday morning comes. I had already kind of stopped doing it Saturday, and she kind of was still doing it. Anyway, so Sunday we're waking up, and her arms and legs are flaring everywhere. I mean, she's just like kind of like tripping out, and I was like, "What's wrong?" And she's like, "I haven't taken my methadone since you picked me up." And I was like, "You know what? I think this weekend needs to come to an end right now."
That's fair.
Yeah, it was a fun weekend, and it was very crazy. But yeah, that was kind of reality check at the end there.
It's a banger.
What do you think?
I don't know.
Did you pay her first?
I didn't pay her. But we did do a lot of cocaine.
Well, that's kind of like paying her.
There's nothing better than knowing a girl who likes to do cocaine. That's all I can say.
I did coke twice when I was 19. I did it on New Year's because this girl I was hollering at, Maria, said, "Hey, let's do some coke." And I said, "Okay." And I said, "Man, I'm never doing that again." And then 4th of July, I was hollering at her again. And Maria says, "Hey, you want to do some coke?" I'm like, "Okay." So I haven't done it since. Anyway,
never done
it. Getting back to, good man. Anyway, getting back to Brian Fisher.
I actually haven't done any in quite a few years. Well, I think I've maybe done like a tiny line here or there, but it's been a while since. But I've had a few stints where, like I say, I had a Friday night habit.
I don't know if I can be involved in this venture anymore with these drug users.
Hey, it's been like 22 years. I think I'm okay now. Anyway, he was released on a $1,000 bond. Lawler, as Too Sexy Brian Christopher, was one of the main stars during the 90s. In the Memphis territory, he eventually ended up in the WWF in 1997. His big run was part of Too Cool with Rikishi and Scotty Too Hottie. He had the talent and the look, although he was small for what the WWE liked to push at the time. But his outside the ring issues pretty much killed his career at the top level, including once getting a highly publicized arrest on charges of bringing steroids and recreational drugs across the border into Canada, which led to his release. By the way, he did that from a Seattle show up to Vancouver. He's a knucklehead. TNA tried to use him when he was starting out, but his issues led to him lasting a very short time. He's been working on independent level ever since. In 2009, he pled guilty to a public intoxication and ordered to attend rehab.
You know, if you go back,
that his dad almost died. That's what's wrong with him.
Yeah.
No, he's probably upset that his dad didn't die the way those two get along.
Oh, God.
But, yeah, that was a bad dude. But anyway, you know, if you go back and you watch his pre-WWF stuff in Memphis, he was actually fucking awesome.
Yeah,
he was awesome. He was an awesome little badass. He could be a badass or a chicken shit heel.
Yeah.
And he was awesome. But then he got WWE, and, you know, he was a small dude. And, you know, he did get bigger in WWE, but he was, you know, still not that big. But, you know, him and Scotty and Rikishi, they were over his shit. I mean,
mm-hmm.
You know,
one of those weird things that just got over for no real you can't really explain why.
Yeah. Whenever he came out, I started doing the shovel dance whenever he would come out.
remember when they brought him back? It was like 2004 or something, and he lasted a day and got fired or something
that. We call that the Marty Jannetty.
He had a lot of heat, like in the dressing room. I think he wasn't well liked. Or you just came off poorly.
So. Yeah. Remember when he blew up just walking to the ring for that Michael Cole angle with Jerry Lawler?
Yeah. He was a puddle of dripping sweat by the time he got to the ring.
Yeah.
Yeah. That probably had something to do with the painkillers, but anyway. Oh, another person in trouble. One Rosa Menendez, who is 33, by the way. Looking good there, girl, for 33. Of course, if she keeps up this, she's not going to look good very long. On the 21st of this month, she was sent home from the European tour. The reports were that she had been, quote-unquote, partying too much on the tour, One person actually described her as a mess. Officially, the WWE reported that she had left the international tour for personal reasons. While not said officially by the company, the talent and some other officials were under the impression she would probably not be back on television for a while. But she has not been suspended at this time.
Why is it that the women go crazy on the European tours? I mean, because you have this incident, then Serena was got in trouble because she was partying too much overseas. Remember, Mickey James pissed off everybody overseas. You know, it's like the women go overseas and they go crazy. And Rosa, you know, she's already gone crazy. I mean, she already had the incident where she didn't get arrested here in San Antonio, but they kind of like took her in because she was like crying hysterical.
There was a story about her boyfriend or something was engaged with some woman in Texas or something.
Yeah. The boyfriend had a double life, was seeing her in Vegas living a life, but then had another girlfriend in Houston living a double life. And it was that big, giant dude who was a bodyguard for Tyson Kidd. Jackson Andrews, and he beat the shit out of her before she came to San Antonio because she had, like, bruises and stuff when she got here. So she's already had, like, this against her. And then one of the reasons that he didn't stick around and he got heat is because her dumbass was telling everybody how her boyfriend is going to be, like, one of the next world champions. So that kind of pissed him, you know, everyone off and got him in trouble because, you know, the quickest way to lose your push in WWE is to date a crazy bitch. so he was out of a job because of her, even though she got to stay. But, I mean, it's just she's not helping herself. And, you know, she fucks up one more time, she's probably out of there. I mean, you know.
No. I figured, like, if you get all the way over there on a European tour, I'd probably be retired to do anything. Like they go out and party or something like that.
Wasn't one of
I'd rather get sent home while I'm in the States. At least it'd be easier to get somewhere and don't have to go out of the country or anything like that. Jesus Christ.
Wasn't there one incident on a plane back from one of these Euro tours where Flair, like, lost his mind and was running around?
It was the plane ride from Hill or something, wasn't it?
Yeah,
it was a plane ride from Hill where he's running around naked in a robe and he's bouncing his fucking pecker off a stewardess's head.
Yeah, and Michael P.S. Hayes got his ponytail cut off. And
after JBL knocked him out because he's being obnoxious drunk. And I think Brock and Kurt Hennig were wrestling near the airplane door or something.
Yeah.
And they rammed up against
plane.
It. Yeah.
On a plane. Yeah. Over the water. Yeah. Anyway, she ended up coming home, and she went on Twitter and claimed, "I'm okay. I had to take care of some personal issues." And that's where Rosa is. Nice job, Rosa.
I think they could put Flair on the planes because everybody liked riding the plane with him because he's already been in one plane crash and don't figure he'll be in a second.
Right. It's not like riding Craig twice in the same place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if they're struck by lightning and shit.
Yeah.
Didn't they scared? Wasn't there something in they were in a plane ride to Moscow or something and
they were having turbulence but it wasn't your normal up it wasn't your up and down turbulence, it was like sideways turbulence where the plane was turning on its side basically and
yeah.
It was like really, really bad.
Oh. One of my, I was watching years ago, it's on an old Metallica video. They show them taking a plane ride and there's just massive turbulence. The camera's just bouncing all around and they zoom in on James Hetfield and he starts singing La Bamba.
Did I tell you guys about my plane ride to New Jersey?
No.
Okay, real quick story. I'm in the emergency seat. That's there's two rows. There's one that's three seats and one that's two. So I'm in the one with three. So basically, I have no seat in front of me. I have all the leg space. Well,
that's poor man's first lady. Class, by the way.
Yeah, a little this older lady, not older lady, but not that much older. Just a little older than me, like maybe late 40s. sits down next to me. She's okay looking, nothing like super gorgeous or anything, but she does have a nice, very nice sized rack. And she's kind of wearing like a sweater or something, so they're like in full effect, you know. And basically when we were landing, we were hitting some serious turbulence. And if anybody remembers, the movie Airplane from the 70s,
Yeah.
They show like a bowl of jelly, and then they show a girl with these big breasts with her breasts just bouncing around like a bowl of jelly. Basically, that's what I sat next to on the way down from New Jersey, and it was the greatest plane ride of all time.
Well, good to know.
Her breasts were just bouncing around like it was the most beautiful sight ever. I said a prayer and thanked God for that.
Well, if Brian Alvarez would have been on your plane, he would have dropped a bucket of water on her.
That would have been even better.
That's true. Okay, next headline. Sami Callihan is headed to WWE Developmental. Sam Johnson, who he's better known as Sami Callihan, who is 25, by the way, was doing his medical last week, which would be prior to him signing a deal with WWE Developmental. So look for Sami Callihan, probably in NXT here real soon. And good on them. He's a good worker. He's great promo, and I like to see them gobble your talent.
Did he used to date Daphne?
I don't know.
Was he at the ROH show in Atlanta as like maybe one of the opening jobber guys?
No.
Kind of like through.
No, he did when ROH was on HDTV. He was one of their job guys, but he quickly got snatched up by Dragon Gate, and Dragon Gate pretty much pushed him to the moon.
Yeah.
So
he was like a feud with Sabu or something like that over there.
He wrestled Sabu last year's WrestleMania weekend, and I was there live. And I'll be honest with you, it was not very good. And I blame Sabu.
He was the one that, remember when they were doing like the last show at the ECW arena and they did that angle at the end?
Yes.
And he came
yes.
out and like shit on the whole thing?
Yeah,
that's what I'm remembering.
He's got a nice endorsement from one Lance Storm as well. So,
well, I need to check out SmackDown tonight because they got Dean Ambrose against The Undertaker.
Ooh, that's right. Don't forget that.
Yeah.
Hopefully,
Brian will put a link on that on the front page. That would be awesome. Undertaker was awesome on Raw. Yeah.
He looked good.
Yeah.
I won't see him again for a year.
Even though he didn't have to carry the shield as much as he carried CM Punk in the match, it was awesome.
Oh, jeez. And our last news story comes from D. Ryback, and he's in trouble because of Twitter. He was trying to build up his own program with Cena and did a bunch of posts. One read, "Watching the pain on Cena's face was worth standing back for. Funny the two things which he said I lack, his ex-wife seems to love." Okay. Soon after, he deleted all his posts regarding Cena. There was some talk from a former Mrs. Cena that she was not happy about the whole thing.
Yeah, I guess not.
So, yeah, right back, got a slap on the head.
Stay on Twitter anyway. Why does a guy with that gimmick need to be on Twitter? Stupid.
Well, here's the thing. You know that there's no way. Okay, Vince McMahon is on Twitter. Triple H is on Twitter. Do you think they're on their phones, you know, just typing away, doing posts? I'm sure they've got somebody doing it for them. So what's the big deal?
I don't know.
Why can't the company just, you know, cut their own promos and put them on Twitter? Because it's obvious that, like, CM Punk does his own stuff on Twitter because, you know, he's commenting on UFC and stuff like that.
He called out
obvious all of them. It's obvious Paul Heyman does his own stuff because he's always retweeting hot women and, you know, putting their pictures up there. So, I mean, why doesn't the company just, you know, for a guy like Ryback, who obviously well, let's be honest, he's probably not real smart. So why can't they just do his post for him?
Well, like, according to that one story with Daniel Bryan, he couldn't even order, he didn't even know how to order chicken out of Panera Bread.
That's right. The Ryback. I'm so glad that name's caught on, the Ryback. That brings me great joy. Yeah, so that's all the news we have for the week. Here's the thing about
there was the guy in Portland. Here's the article right here. Frank Culbertson Jr., who promoted a Portland Wrestling Revival promotion on television in Oregon from 2002 to 2007, was sentenced to 8 years in prison after pleading guilty to aggravated theft totaling $515,000. His pleading guilty led to police dropping charges of theft, computer crimes, and identity theft in his plea bargain. Culbertson, 54, worked in the accounting department of Cornell Pump Company and pleaded guilty to stealing from the company. The company had filed suit against Culbertson in November. Culbertson was a television ad salesman who put together a deal bringing Portland Wrestling back to television. The promotion folded in 2007 when Culbertson was convicted on charges of embezzlement at Broadway Cab, where he worked in the accounting department. He was sentenced at that time to 30 days in jail and required to pay back $48,000 in restitution. Roddy Piper, The Grappler, Brian Alvarez, and Mike Rogers were all part of his Portland wrestling group. Culbertson, in recent years, followed wrestling closely and was a regular until recently, was posting on the Wrestling Classics message board. So that's that.
Yeah,
Is this around the time when Roddy Piper locked Brian Alvarez in a dark restroom and raped him?
He didn't rape him. He just...
I think he might have raped him.
Well,
I
don't know. But anyway...
if he did, why would you make fun of the man for it? Clearly it's something he needs to get over.
Anyway, this was... the guy that tried to revive Portland wrestling. This isn't like the big time wrestling from Portland that was back on when I was, you know, 12 and 13.
The big time wrestling of Portland. Yeah, the big time shows that were at the flea market.
Dude, that's what it was called. The weekly television was Big Time Wrestling from Portland, Oregon.
Okay,
that is what it is. Yeah.
Yeah. That's what they called it, Big Time Wrestling out of Portland, Oregon.
Okay.
And Billy Two Beers, I mean Billy Two Eagles and The Grappler and stuff like that. Ah, Billy Two Beers. Anyway, yeah, so I don't really know that promoter. But when you told me a wrestling promoter stole money, I was like, what, duh. Yeah, the grass is green too there.
What is the biggest feud in the history of Portland wrestling, like pro wrestling versus the commission? Seems like the commission is always trying to fuck over wrestling in Portland or something.
They, for the longest time, had no commission, where they could just get away with everything. And then that's why WWE didn't run there for years, because the commission got really, really strict, and they adapted these old laws. And Ed Moretti actually brought the, like, quote-unquote wrestling handbook to one of our shows, and, you know, it had language like a performer is not to leave his feet during a, you know, it's like, what? How do you have a match where a wrestler can't leave their feet? You know, no jumping. Yeah, there was all this stuff, and that's why I just heard a podcast with Kyle O'Reilly, and he's actually from Vancouver. He got his start up in Vancouver with Michelle Starr at ECCW, and he blatantly said, I had to get the blank out of the Pacific Northwest because there's nothing up here. And it's all the commission. Up in Canada, there is no commission. You can just do whatever you want. That's why a lot of these promoters around here end up running on the tribal land, because the commission can't touch them.
And they make more beer and alcohol sales.
Ah, well, not to mention the slot machines. But if, to run a regular show out here, you have to have an ambulance on site. You have to have paramedics on site. There's like tons and tons of stuff. If you want to get color, you know, the way around it would be to actually gig yourself earlier in the day and then hope it busts back open during a match.
You can claim hard way or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I'd be in the dressing room and somebody would be putting a blade to their head and be like, well, you're going to wrestle in 2 hours. So it's silly.
Yeah.
No. Commissions suck.
Yep.
Just saying. Commissions
suck. Well, like I think it was in like Baltimore, they had a thing where a woman can't wrestle a man or something like that.
Okay.
And they had to do it because they were doing it at the Great American Bash. They were doing like Rick Steiner and Mitch Hyde against Arn Anderson and Paulie Dangerously in a cage. And so they had like I think it was Dick Slater and Dick Murdoch kidnap her before the match so they could get her out of there because she couldn't fight a man or something. But I think they came back later. WWF came back later and they did Vince versus Stephanie. But I think it was they just said, fuck it, we'll pay a fine. You know, we'll pay whatever we have to pay to, you know, do in the first ever father and daughter I quit match. Which is the first ever father and daughter I quit match. No, I think of things are fucking stupid.
That was awesome.
I was actually contemplating actually running for commissioner office for Washington State, but I realized it was just like being a pro wrestler. You had to drive everywhere and actually talk to one of the guys about doing it. And he didn't know nothing. You know, it's like, well, did you wrestle in high school? No. Did you ever? No, I just had to read this book and study up on this, and it's like, man, that's stupid, you know. So I realized they're like a test. No, you okay? Well, it doesn't make a lot of sense.
If you would have became a commissioner, the only thing I could see you ruling about would be making a rule that Brian Alvarez can't do jobs anymore.
Well, come on now. I don't know. It'd be cool to actually do it, but then, you know, just to be paid to go to wrestling shows, that's kind of cool. You know what I mean?
Have you ever watched that Piper show they got up there that they've been doing? Some kind of Portland wrestling show with Roddy Piper or something?
No idea. Oh, that's a new one for me. Yeah, sorry.
Anyway, what's the time? Yeah. Oh, 6 minutes. So let me draw the puns away. Everyone check out AngryMarks.com. You can always download the stream our show at AngryMarks.com along with a lot of other shows like the Angry Mark Show and just basically shows almost every night at AngryMarks.com. You can always check out our show at BlogTalkRadio.com/Contrere and older shows at BlogTalkRadio.com/Edward-Laredo. You can follow me at Twitter at Ed in San Antonio, and you can follow me at Facebook at Edward Laredo or Ed in San Antonio. And this past week I did post the WrestleMania Super Album, which has over 350 photos from our trip from WrestleMania, a nice collection of just photos from the people who went, photos from WrestleMania, photos from WrestleCon and the shows, and, of course, just monuments and famous shit from New York. So check out that album. I'm sure Craig cries the tears if he ever looks at it. Well, have tears flowing if he ever looks at it from seeing what he missed over the weekend. And, yeah, check out that album. It's open to the public, so you don't even have to be my friend to check it out. So, check it out.
My plugs are very simple. Check out TeamViggity.com. The Peach Machine has got me losing some pounds. And great dude.
Losing fat. He's an asshole, and I demand that his name be banned from this show.
And also check me out on Twitter. You can follow me at Proper Jam, and you can check out my back and forth with one Vincent Verhey as we attended Prince concert last weekend, and it was
phenomenal. I knew you're going to segue yourself into your Prince concert. Okay, Craig, I know you've been waiting all show. You got 5 minutes. Go ahead.
I wasn't going to say a thing about it, but yeah, it was.
How was Prince in the renovations?
Actually, it wasn't the renovation. It was Prince and something called Three-Eyed Girl, and his backing band were three young ladies, very attractive, and they rocked. And a redhead on guitar, and a redhead on bass, and a blonde girl that looked like Gwen Stefani on drums. And they were phenomenal. They opened up with Let's Go Crazy, did a bunch of old songs, Always in My Hair, and Your Man, and they jammed for a very long time on the first encore. In fact, they jammed so much that they were pressed up to the time where the second show of the evening was about to start. And Prince came back out and he said, "Hey, I'm really sorry. We jammed too long. We were just in a groove and ended up, I'm going to do one more." And so he sat down at the piano and they did Purple Rain. And Vince shed a tear and I hugged him. And it was a great evening. It was very enjoyable. It was a total rock show.
Which one of you guys put Junior Horseman on your shoulder so he could see?
Well, see, it works out. Vince is a good maybe 2 inches taller than I am, so we put Horseman on the side of me, and Vince stood in the back of both of us, and everybody was very happy. Tiny room, 1,500 capacity. I'm sure it was oversold by at least 200-300. It was packed in there. It was sweaty. It was beautiful. It was such a great show. And I made a statement at the end of the night and threw it out on Twitter. I said, I paid $250 to see Prince, but I feel like I ripped him off. And Prince's backing band actually retweeted me with a picture of them from that night. So I thought that was kind of cool.
You paid how much?
I know. I paid $250 to see Prince, and that was before the extortion fee, so it was actually closer to $275.
Does your wife know how much money you spent on this show?
Well, it was for my birthday, so it was cool.
I ain't never been to a concert.
Wow.
What? You've never been to any kind of a concert at all?
No, I don't see the point. I got a CD, I can listen to that. I won't see anybody live.
Concerts aren't as good as they used to be back in the day, like around 1984, 1985, 1986, 1987, where you could go to a concert, you could pull out a big fat-ass fucking joint lighter, get all stoned. You know, you could probably buy
that
acid. Buy some acid from some outside the stadium. I mean, and then you could go in and rock out the fucking Motley Crue, Rat, fucking Judas Priest, Iron Maiden, AC/DC. Concerts in the 80s was the greatest thing fucking ever and shit.
Sure.
When I was in college, I went to a Tim McGraw concert. I take that back.
Huh, good for you.
Yeah, it was horrible.
Yeah.
Nope. Left.
I've been to, no lie, I've been to over 250 shows.
Okay, take out the Pearl Jam concerts, and how many have you been to, Ken?
No. I've only seen Pearl Jam 33 times.
Well, I haven't been to that many concerts, but back in the 80s in the hair metal bands, I pretty much made it a point to see everybody.
You name a band, I've probably seen them. I've seen everybody from Cinderella to Elton John to Metallica to Dokken to you name it.
Wasp?
And I've seen them. Wasp was one of my first shows, actually. They opened up for Kiss.
My very first concert I went to was Rat and as a headliner in Bon Jovi opening.
Nice.
It was Bon Jovi that was right out of the cellar, but I don't remember too much. But yeah, concerts back then were the shit, man. I mean, chicks fucking were dressed all fucking hairband slutty, I guess is the best way to describe them. And yeah, I mean, it was awesome. I remember having my brother would usually drop us off, so he'd smoke us out on the way to the concert. And yeah, that was just a great time. In fact, you mentioned Cinderella. I actually saw Cinderella amongst the week their first single came out on MTV. They were joined by Poison, whose first album or first song didn't debut on MTV for a month later.
Yeah, I have not seen Poison, but I actually was going to see Poison as they were opening up for David Lee Roth on the Skyscraper tour. But one Brett Michaels jumped off a PA monitor and broke his leg in Spokane the night before. So
they're badass. I mean, I've seen them
sure.
Like two or three times, but yeah, they're badass. They're one of those bands that kind of gets somewhat of a little bit of a bad rap, but they were badass. Now they do have the cover of one of the gayest looking albums of all time.
Yes, yes they do.
Because that one album
they all look gay back then. The weirdos.
they still kind of do actually.
No, they didn't look gay. They look like women.
Yes, they look like gay women.
I guess we're over our live feed time, so I guess we'll start to wrap up. Craig, do you have anything else you want to talk about? I mean, do you want to talk about Sheila E. or something?
Lisa and Cold Jam.
Oh, Lisa.
I should get my friend to come on the show and give a review of that show that she went to last year with Lisa and the Cold Jam.
Oh, my gosh. Last week
here in San Antonio, they had Lisa and the Cold Jam, Exposé and Tiffany all together.
Gosh. Oh my gosh. That's
the only thing that would make it more perfect is if they had Sade.
Oh.
Being a smooth operator.
Right?
Yeah, I don't have anything else to add. You know what? I do have one more thing to add. The next day was National Record Store Day and
it was 420 day, Craig. It's the holidays for rest.
Yes, it was 420, but I actually got to meet Mike McCready from Pearl Jam and the drummer from the Screaming Trees, whose name is Barrett Martin, and they did a little project called Mad Season, and I got to meet those guys and have them sign the Record Store Day release and got a picture with them, and that is up on my Twitter as well. So I had an awesome weekend last week.
What'd they say when they saw you? Would they say you again?
I ain't gonna lie. Mike McCready. I've met Mike McCready so many times, and this is no boast or anything like that. I have met Mike McCready numerous times, and he was just like, "Hey, you know what I mean?"
So,
but he was very kind.
If something bad ever happens to Mike McCready or he disappears, I'm turning you in, Craig.
Well, I showed the picture to one of the guys at work, and he's like, "Oh, that's cool." He said, "Where are the cops stationed?" And I said, "Oh, they're just out of the frame, actually." So, anyway, yeah, they know I have a bad habit, but he was very kind and. Even gave a few guitar picks to my son because he was actually had to sit through with me. So,
yeah, that's the only person I know that has a Pearl Jam fetish. I can't even call you a fan. It's more like a Pearl Jam fetish.
Pearl Jam is a way of life, and all I can say is that. Anyway, that's it for me. I need cough drops.
Okay, Katrina, do you have anything you want to talk about before we go?
No, you can go to youtube.com/Katrair for my channel there. I'll try to put up that link to that Forever Hardcore documentary here in a little bit. And there's a bunch of other stuff up there that I'm not going to tell you what it is. You can go there yourself and check it out. And everybody go watch an awesome movie this week. watched Django Unchained. Have you seen that?
Have not seen that yet.
Fucking awesome movie. It's probably on DirecTV pay-per-view. You ought to go watch it.
It is. I'll watch that right after I watch Hardwire City.
Okay.
Well, I will end the show with requesting a favor from all of our fans from all over the world. You need to get on your computer and get your emails ready and send an email to Brian and Dave and request a retraction on the Nikki Bella big titty story and tell them that they have to get the true facts out there and let the world know the truth.
Yes. Everybody needs to be abreast to this story.
Damn right. Because those are some beautiful breasts. Even if they're
I can't get any sleep over
than the other.
I've got to tell you, I ain't been able to sleep.
I've been like that all week.
Well, that's because I've been up masturbating.
All right.
With that, we will end the show.
To be the man, you got to beat the man. You want to find out how good you are? You're looking at the mattress shit. Let's go hook him up! Tonight.